Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming. This week, we got an extra big show. It is another twofer. This past weekend, MLW Slaughterhouse was to be had. In addition to that, we'll be covering MLW Fusion 187. But first, the news. As announced previously, the next big event is MLW Fightland. It is going to be Saturday, November 18th at the 2300 Arena. Tickets are on sale now, starting at $15. No official matches have been signed quite yet, but we do have a list of competitors scheduled to appear, including Alex Kane, Jacob Fatu, Matt Cardona, Filthy Tom Lawler, Selena De La Renta, the rest of the Beaumaye Fight Club, The Calling, or what's left of it, Mance Warner, Rocky Romero, Janai Kai, Tracy Williams, the rest of the Second Gear crew, Delmi Exo, Love Doug, Tony Deppen, who, spoiler alert, gets suspended today, Ichiban, Kevin Blackwood, who last I knew was injured, Matt Stryker, Joe Dombrowski, Tiara James, Zeta Steel, Cannonball and Talon, MSL, the main event, Jay Bougie, who's Beaumaye, Brett Ryan Goslin, and much, much more. All right, going to move it right along. Let's just jump right in it. And Fightland is in the future. Now is Slaughterhouse. All right, it is time to see who will survive in the Slaughterhouse. Oh, so much happened. It was really good. But I guess I'll just give a summary of it at the end of it. Of course, we are joining our show. We got the old school WCW tombstones. Most notably, we got a tombstone for Sean Ross Sapp, who died reporting incorrect news to the dirt sheets. We are welcomed to the show by Mario, Matt Stryker, and the prisoner, Joe Dombrowski. Looks like we are going to start the show off with the Chamber of Horrors Second Gear crew members Mance Warner and Matthew Justice taking on Talon and Jeff Cannonball of The Calling. We aren't even, like, going to start the match properly. Like, we're just going to brawl on the outside. But before we get into that, like, the rules, if you haven't heard, haven't watched it yet, are fairly simple. We have a cage that is filled with Gaga. It's got the dime store cemetery gates plastered around the top of it. Inside the ring are various weapons and implements. Point of this match is to take your opponent, put him in the chair of torture, and throw the fatal lever. Harkens back to WCW Halloween Havoc. I think it's 91, but don't full-on quote me for that, because I've taken too many blows to the head, and sometimes years get fuzzy, where a big cluster of a match occurred back then, and it was actually universally reviled. I love it now just because it's a weird, like, B-movie kind of things, and the whole brawl between Cactus Jack and Abdullah the Butcher afterwards was a baseballs. Anyway, so the point of this match, put a person in the electric chair, throw the switch, electrocute them. Meanwhile, as I'm talking, the Second Gear crew and The Calling are brawling around the ring. Technically, the match hasn't started, we're just brawling. Talon gets double chokeslammed on the gurney. The gurney doesn't, like, even break, so that's some heavy-duty stuff right there. They are eventually thrown into the ring, where the Second Gear crew waits for the bell and then starts teeing off with chairs. Cannonball can't be bothered to sell these chair shots 100%. In the meanwhile, Talon is hip-tossed into a board placed into the corner. Cannonball no-sells his way into some offense. He's a big old dude, so I guess he doesn't have to sell chair shots or a concerto. So, you know, what do I know? Mance gets paper-cutted in the webbings of his fingers and then the corners of his mouth. That spot's always gnarly to watch. Also gets spiked by a screwdriver and stapled by Talon. I thought I screwed up. My notes are illegible because I can't. I'm actually illiterate. Talon gets hip-tossed by Cannonball into Mance and the table set up in the corner. However, enough time is spent beating Mance Warner that Matthew Justice has revived himself. He has a chair and he's attacking. Mance hits a pile driver on the pumpkin, though Mancer's ass takes the brunt of the damage, of at least the pumpkin related damage anyway. Meanwhile, in the corner, Cannonball has a board placed on top of him. Justice does what Justice does best, and that's climb and fall off of high things. Justice climbs to the top of the cage, does a somersault Van Terminator from the top of the cage, and that was just bloody amazeballs. Like, I don't think I've ever seen someone do like a proper senton off the top of a cage to begin with, let alone through a board into a squishy human being, and that human being just got squishier with that impact. Talon, who has been beaten senseless at this point, gets dragged and locked into the chair of torture. Mance holds him down as Thrash, Matthew Justice, throws the fatal lever. Poor Talon is electrocuted. As the match ends, Cannonball just F's out, like he just doesn't care about his electrocuted partner. Second Gear Crew celebrate in the ring. Your winners by electrocution, the Second Gear Crew. I know a lot of folks will hate this match, just because a lot of folks are kind of tired of some of the hardcore brawling that MLW's throwing out. Despite my mocking of Cannonball's lack of selling of chair shots, I thought the match was fun. It did what it's supposed to. It wasn't supposed to be some like 5-star classic or anything. It was just supposed to be like all the weird nostalgic plunder that Warner is throwing out there. And in the meanwhile, continuing the feud between the Second Gear Crew and the Calling. And really, like, the Second Gear Crew kind of like needed kind of a statement win over the Calling. So they haven't really had one since this feud began. They've just mostly fought around outside. So Second Gear Crew are up at least 1-0 on the night. We'll see how the rest of the night goes as the Openweight Championship is on the line. Fun. Match was fun. I did enjoy it. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything super spectacular. I wasn't expecting a 5-star classic. Just thought it was going to be schlocky fun, and that's exactly what it was. In the meanwhile, as they're cleaning up the mess inside the ring, we get the announcement that the latest Japanese import through the partnership of New Japan Wrestling is Miyu Yamashita. One of the top names in TJPW is coming to MLW soon. So that's also a big get as part of this New Japan talent exchange type dealio. And I assume she will be coming to Fightland if I have to make an educated guess. But yeah, I'm excited to see that and see who they are going to pair her up against. Backstage, Sam Laterna is with Selena De La Renta and Rocky Romero. Selena puts over that tonight is going to be about history and business. So she's revamping Promotionist Dorada, bringing in Rocky Romero. He's going to be taking on Akira in a title for title fight. And we'll get to that in a minute. But first, Sam has to hang out on stage with the one called Manders. Evidently, there was a coin flip backstage on who gets to spin the wheel for their National Openweight Championship match with Ricky Shane Page. Despite my hopes and dreams of this being winner has to be nice to me, it is instead a falls count anywhere match. Manders, as a result, threatens to put Ricky Shane Page in the dirt. He's going to have to wait, though, because our next match is for the MLW Middleweight and the CMLL Historic Welterweight Championships. Akira battles Promociones Doradas, Rocky Romero with Selena De La Renta. Akira comes out with Lucha Goons. Jesus Rodriguez is, I guess, a mouthpiece for Promociones now. He introduces Rocky and Selena. The crowd is surprisingly behind Akira for this match, despite some of like the lack of response for the Calling get in the past. Akira is thoroughly the crowd favorite for this here match. As such, Akira offers a hand to Rocky Romero. Rocky just spits in it, so Kira takes the hand that was spat and slaps the taste out of Rocky's mouth, and I did laugh at that. We get Graps to start the party. This match isn't farty. It's not even Freudian. Drunk, lack of sleep. Hyped, super hyped, really. We start the match with Graps. Selena interjects herself early, causing a distraction to Akira. However, Akira does take the offense. Big dropkick in the corner. We get a big fight on the apron. However, Rocky hits a suplex on the ring apron. And if no one's ever told you before, that is the hardest part of the ring. Followed up by a double stomp off the ring apron. Inside the ring, Rocky gets octopus hold until Akira drops his weight a bit, so Rocky has to release it. However, Akira rolls into a cross arm breaker, works over the fingers and the wrist during this here scenario. However, Rocky locks in one of his own. We have our first spirit battle of the evening, trading offense back and forth. However, Akira catches a run off with a Saito suplex. Get Kawada kicks and a German suplex for two by Akira. Akira locks in STF, turns into a modified Regal stretch, but Rocky gets to the ropes. Selena gets involved, gets on the ring apron. The calling goons come towards her and start jawjacking with her, and Akira kind of like backs them off. Like, I think he's like, I'm not sure what the goal is on that, because it's Selena. It's not like they're interfering in the match itself. However, Selena gets a kendo stick and chases off the goons, which that looks real great for the calling on that front. However, all this leads to like a bunch of distraction for Kira, allows Rocky to take over. He hits a standing Shiranui for two, followed up by just a regular running Shiranui, also for two. T-bone into the corner by Akira. He's trying to fight through this. He's going for the approval of the crowd. Sets Rocky on the top rope, which I'm not sure why he would do that. Rocky fights out and hits a super Shiranui, but we're not done yet. Akira deaths up and is defiant. Get a running stomp for two, followed by a rear naked choke. Akira is sent to the ref, and Akira's kind of like, it's okay, I'm not going to hit you. And Rocky hits a low blow while the ref's cowering in the corner, followed up by Trent Beretta's crunchy. 1, 2, 3. New MLW middleweight champion, and now, and concurrently, the current CMLL historic welterweight champion, Rocky Romero of Promociones Dorada. And this match was great. I'm curious to see where we're going with this calling stuff, because Akira totally played the face, and I know like we try to argue like some of it was just like, well, someone's got to be the face, because no one really wants to cheer for Selena De Laurentiis' crew. But like, Akira was kind of over before the bell even rang, and really he showed a lot of babyface fire throughout this thing, and luckily for us, like, he showed what he can do. Like, for those folks who haven't seen Akira in action, he's a very good professional wrestler. And depending on what your opinion is of the deathmatch, he doesn't, quote-unquote, need to do deathmatches. Like, he's one of those guys who, you know, can wrestle, and he showed it off tonight. Didn't need to go hardcore, and didn't go hardcore. But I was very curious to see how he kind of, like, called off the goons of the calling to kind of like do his own thing. Did it backfire in the end? Yeah, probably. But then again, I think it backfired more that he showed leniency towards the referee, who was obviously biased. Up next, speaking of the calling, it is the Falls Count Anywhere match for the National Openweight Championship. The one called Manders taking on the calling's Ricky Shane Page. Steven DeAngelis, the ring announcer, like, I don't know if I'm just mishearing it, but it seemed like he called the openweight title several times throughout the night the overweight championship, and I had to laugh at that, just because of the relative physiques comparable to mine by both Ricky Shane Page and the one called Manders. Speaking of like the calling getting attacked before the bell, Manders is on his way to the ring. RSP attacks him during the entrance, hits a big body slam on the floor for two. Since this is a false count anywhere, we get the bell. The bell just goes ahead and rings because no false count anywhere. You don't have to be in the ring for any of this. We do get into the ring though, and Manders powers up and chokes RSP with a chain, whips RSP with a t-shirt, or kind of a button-up shirt, flannel shirt, whatever, a la, you know, wet towel snaps. Could put an eye out with that. You gotta, you know, watch that. Manders introduces a chair, and of course, since, you know, he who smelt it dealt it, RSP whips Manders into the chair, into the corner. RSP eats a spine buster onto two chairs outside the ring, but the goons finally prove their worth a wee bit and break up the pin. But Manders, unlike some folks, is smart enough. Mark that one on your calendars. Manders is smart enough to at least pile drive one of them outside the ring and kind of like neutralize that their threat. Manders then drags RSP backstage. The camera don't follow for some odd reason, and we're just gonna kind of like, oh, well, I guess we'll catch up to him later, and we'll have a new match. Yeah, so I guess we're just gonna head and move on, so I won't put my final thoughts on that until we are closer to that time, though I question that their decision. And so does the crowd. Like, the crowd, like, as soon as Steven DeAngelis gets in the ring and starts announcing for the next match, the crowd was not happy about that. And luckily, there was theme music and commentary to kind of drown out the verbal disapproval of this decision. Anyway, said next match is Delmi Exo versus the MLW Halloween Phantom. We are going to finally see how correct I am that the Phantom is a resurrected, ravishing Rick Rude, as there is precedence for a Halloween Phantom being ravishing Rick Rude. So we get, as we're getting like our entrances, we get a picture of Manders and RSP brawling through the backstage. When it comes time for the Phantom to come out, I'm disappointed because a Phantom didn't come out. Instead, it was Selena De La Renta and a debuting Jinai Kai. Oh dear me, somebody is getting their head kicked in tonight. And unfortunately, I think that is friend of the show, Delmi Exo. So just right off the bat, like, I'm disappointed. You promised us a Phantom. Instead, we just get Jinai Kai, and we don't get a Jinai Kai under a mask, under a cloak or anything. It's just, here's Jinai Kai. Don't get me wrong. I am very excited to see Jinai Kai wrestle in MLW. She is actually one of my favorite women's wrestlers on the independent scene currently. And just like a very innovative fighter within women's wrestling. However, again, like, if we're going to play up the shtick of having a Phantom, I want to see a Phantom, gosh darn it. Now I'm really heckin' angry in addition to not finishing that Falls Count Anywhere match. Anyway, we do have a featherweight championship match to be had. Delmi is taking on Jinai Kai with Selena De La Renta. Delmi goes for grabs. Kai goes for kicks, and we have a standoff in the process. We get two La Mystica attempts. I really had to like stop and think, like, and listen to the commentary of this, because it looked like a botched head scissors, and it took me a moment to realize that it was La Mystica, that it's a head scissor into an armbar, and that Kai was trying to, you know, block and counter the armbar, so it just looked like a botched head scissors, and that actually wasn't the case. So solid storytelling on that front, but like, you really had to pay attention and know what Delmi was going for in that process. Further referencing things that are keep happening, Selena makes herself known early in this match too. Delmi goes out to the ring apron after her and eats a big kick to the ribs, like, and she just like bellowed, like, just deeper than my voice bellowed. So a commentary is really kind of referencing like that kick probably broke some ribs right there. This is followed up by a reverse DDT on the apron by Jinai Kai. And in case you've forgotten in the last like 10 minutes, that is the hardest part of the ring, ladies and gentlemen. Back inside the ring, Kai is working over the ribs with kicks and a running kick to the back of the head. More kicks to the ribs and a PK kick to the face. Only gets a two count. Delmi catches a kick and gets a cross-legged German suplex to mount some offense back. Get a flurry of offense. Kai is sent outside and eats some double knees off the ring apron. Kai counters a Delmi driver with lots of rip kicks and a Northern Lights suplex. Multiple, like, almost Kawada-style kicks to the back. Delmi tries to fight back again, going for the Delmi driver. Once again, this is going to be her downfall. Kai fights out of it and locks in a modified Dragon Sleeper with her arms hooked behind her back. And Delmi has no choice but to tap out. The winner of this match and new MLW Featherweight Champion, Jinai Kai. And this match was... yeah, really good as well. Again, like my one complaint really is just the, you know, lack of a Phantom per se. Like, if we're gonna advertise a Phantom, let's have a Phantom. But otherwise, like, the match itself, you know, was serviceable. We did get a shock that Kai won the championship, which, like, I waffled on in my predictions that I don't think we ever made the internet, that I really kind of depended on who was the opponent, whether I thought Becca was going to retain, or Delmi was going to retain or not. Like, I figured if Becca, when the match was being promoted as Becca versus Delmi, I figured Becca was going to take the championship, but I didn't know if plans would happen to change depending on whom the opponent was, but Jinai Kai will be a worthy successor to the featherweight championship. So, like, really, like, big picture, no complaints on that there match. I would have seen the match be a little bit cleaner since we've already gotten some Selena interference anyway. But, you know, heel's got a heel, bro. Meanwhile, as I'm talking, we get more footage backstage. RSP and Manders are brawling around the back through, like, the electrical area. Unfortunately, no one gets electrocuted during this chunk of the match. Meanwhile, let's get ready for the big dream match, Minoru Suzuki versus Jacob Fatu. Like, the match starts, and we're just going to, like, bask in the moment of Suzuki debuting in MLW. You know, so we got this pause, a lot of the crowd to chant, like, this is awesome already. You know, we get our first fecal chant of the evening, and the men haven't even locked up yet. We do finally get some grap action. Suzuki tries to wrestle Fatu, and Fatu just chops. Suzuki just laughs at him. Fatu does power through Suzuki before Suzuki locks him in a disrespectful rope triangle. We're brawling around the outside of the ring, and Suzuki starts no-selling chops, as he is wont to do. Going inside, and Suzuki locks in a knee bar. Fatu powers out, hits a Samoan drop, and a handspring moonsault, gets a two count out of that. Suzuki powers back with a big boot and a PK kick. Very disrespectful pin with a boot on the face, and that really just cheesed Fatu off. And Suzuki's like, okay, then just bring it, and demands that Fatu just chop him, and we do. We get a strike battle out of this, and Fatu is dropped with a forearm shot. However, Fatu does get up, hits a Falcon Arrow. Somehow Suzuki kicks out at two, but Suzuki works his way around and powers up the big dude and holds him up for a moment for the Gotch pile driver. 1, 2, 3. Winner of this match, Minoru Suzuki, Angry Murder Grandpa. Match, like, compared to other matches on the card, it wasn't built up to be a classic. This was just going to be a dream match scenario, and it's just, it told what it needed to tell. You didn't need to go a half hour. The story, you know, was what it was, and it was the spectacle of Minoru Suzuki in MLW. Played all the hits, you know, over AF. Fatu doesn't lose anything in the process of losing to Suzuki, who's a bona fide legend. And Suzuki gets a big win here in America, which actually kind of surprised me more, because Suzuki does a lot of putting people over in his tours of America. But he actually got a big win, and I'm actually glad to see it. After the match, we get respect from Fatu. He does the bow thing, you know, they hug, shake hands, and all that good stuff. I will put over at this point, like, this match has probably some of the best commentary MLW has done in quite some time. They really put over the accomplishments of Suzuki, while also putting over what a threat Fatu is, and really making it seem that like Suzuki has never been in like this much trouble or this much trouble this early in the match, or hasn't been with an athlete who can do X, Y, and Z. And I felt that it really added to the match in this situation. And I know Stryker's very hit and miss. Like, he can be overbearing and he can be a little like extra smug and like really just throw out references just to hear himself talk. It's like he has a podcast or something, you know. It's like he's on MLW Confusion and self-aggrandizing, but like when he's on his game, like Stryker is very good. And you know, Dombrowski is really one of the kind of like the unsung play-by-play guys in the wrestling scene nowadays, and he doesn't get as much credit as he probably should for what he does to enhance matches. And their commentary, as great as this match was, I feel like their commentary really took it up to the next level, and this is what commentary is supposed to do for professional wrestling. That being said, we still have some show to get through. Hey, Ricky Jane Page, Manders have come back to the ring. We also get an announcement that CMML is going to bring in more wrestlers for Fightland coming up next month. Manders hits RSP with like all the tombstones that he can at the point. Inside the ring, we get a top rope splash by RSP. He only gets a two count out of that. RSP goes outside, can't find the weapons he wants, and Manders hits a Lope to the arena floor. Suple on the floor gets a two count, followed up by a pumpkin assisted Dusty Rhodes elbow drop, if you will. Dragged upstage, Manders like finishes off all the other tombstones over RSP's head, and then follows it up with a spine buster on the board for two. Akira comes out, is just like, hey everybody, I'm Akira. And Manders goes after him because it's Akira. Akira ducks a lariat attempt. RSP then uses Akira as a meat shield and uses that distraction to get a DDT on the arena floor to retain the National Openweight Championship, or if you're Steven DeAngelis, the National Overweight Championship. But a bump. After the match, Akira gets in some words with RSP, and RSP just shoves him to the floor and like walks off. So we are really seeing the dissension in the calling, and I'm curious to see where we're going on that. Shout out to Muffins, who started calling the dissension within the ranks before we got any overt signs as such. But I'm especially interested in where we're going with this, just because the calling are still tag team champions. So Akira and RSP are still tag team champions. Like, they haven't lost that belt yet. And now they're having shoving matches and being used as meat shields. In the meanwhile, the match itself, it was all right. I didn't care for the fact that we didn't follow it throughout the backstage. Like, I feel like if we're doing a proper Falls Count Anywhere match, like, you should be prepared to take the cameras with you. I think this, like, on a night that was, like, super awesome as a whole, like, I felt like this was one weird, random decision that kind of brought things down. And I, you know, comparatively speaking, you know, RSP kept it pretty simple and safe. Like, we didn't have any blood or anything like super crazy, so like I didn't feel like there was a need to like just kind of stop the match and restart it, you know, 45 minutes later. But that's not on the competitors, that's on production, that's on the higher ups. And obviously the fans weren't overall terribly thrilled with that decision either. Following this, we get an announcement that there are new MLW figures coming out. Want to guess how many of them are still with the company? That's right, the answer is potentially zero, depending on what they're actually doing with Microman. But it looks like our new figures are a terrible rendition of Microman. And then also we get decent representations of EJ and Duca and Lince Dorado. Please note, once again, and Duca is flat out signed by AEW, and Lince is, you know, traveling the country. So Good job. I think the only action figure with someone who's still technically with the company is that of Jacob Fatu. Cool. Yeah, so I'm being a downer now. Let's bring it up a notch. It's time for our main event. Main event of the evening. Last minute call. Filthy Tom Lawlor versus Alex Kane. Of course, if you haven't been paying attention to the interwebs, this match was supposed to be Davey Boy Smith Jr. versus Alex Kane. But after the last pod, it came out that this wasn't like some kayfabe thing, that we just didn't come to a deal and they were just making stuff up for swerve purposes. Davey Boy Smith Jr. had an emergency appendectomy and had a bout of like severe bout of diverticulitis with it, and evidently lost a chunk of colon in the process of his appendectomy. So like, dude was sick. Dude was sick. So, best wishes go out to David Boy Smith Jr. and his family. Speedy recovery. And just, hope for the best, because that's no bueno. If they felt the surgery was supposed to be, an emergency, that means you're pretty darn sick, bro. But yeah, so he's out of action indefinitely until he gets back up on his feet. As I said, hopefully it's sooner than later. In the meanwhile, MLW did announce that Filthy Tom Lawlor, former MLW champion, will be making his return to challenge Alex Kane, and that's where we are tonight. So the bell rings, we get Graps, Thema Knight, Graps. Lawlor goes for strikes. Kane is trying to out-wrestle him. Kane finally locks in an exploder suplex and a big splash on the apron. Once again, still the hardest part of the ring. Lawlor gets an apron PK kick and then does a strip tease, because I thought he was actually going to wrestle in his jorts. Turns out, nah, still wearing jorts under his jorts. Reveals his tighty jorts underneath his regular jorts before we resume the action outside the ring. Lawlor does a full lap penalty kick on Kane outside the ring. Competitors finally make it inside the ring, and Kane gets locked in a hammerlock arm breaker. In the corner, machine gun chops by Lawlor is followed up by Kimura Lock. Kane counters with an exploder into the corner. Big move there, followed by a belly-to-belly suplex. Shane Douglas rolling over in his grave about how awesome that belly to belly was. However, it was only a two count, but it's serious enough that Kane puts the straps down. Kane, however, is sent into the ring post, and they fight on the top rope, but Kane hits a super play, unable to take advantage though. Crash landing suplex, but eats a knee to the face for his efforts, plus a couple of kicks by Tom Lawlor as well. Lawlor goes back to work on that injured shoulder and locks in a triangle. However, Kane is able to power up and power bomb Lawlor in the process. We're trading strikes back and forth, and Kane hits a big lariat for two. Lawlor though takes back to the offense and hits the nasty knee. Only gets a two count off that, and he's pretty shocked that that didn't get the victory right there. From there, we are trading guillotine chokes. Excuse me, not guillotine chokes, but the rear naked choke variety. I don't know. I just really wanted to see a guillotine somewhere, and I was disappointed on that front. But they are rolling through the rear naked attempts before Lawlor really gets one in on his own that Kane can't properly escape. Luckily, though, Kane has been watching his tapes, specifically Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper. It's WrestleMania 9, I believe, right? Correct me in the comments. And bounces himself off the rope onto Tom's shoulders on the mat. One, two, three, the winner of the match, and still MLW World Heavyweight Champion Alex Kane. This was, as I thought it would be, this match I felt was a statement win for Kane to really kind of like cement his title reign. Not that his matches with Hammerstone or Willie Mack were not good by any stretch of the imagination, but like really at a certain level, I don't think anyone, like, I felt like those matches, it was a foregone conclusion of what was going to happen, who was going to win the match. And Lawler added an air of unpredictability, I felt, because he was a former champion, and he's going around the country killing it right now, you know, former New Japan Strong champion, etc. So, like, there was this kind of air of danger about things, especially when we started throwing in the concept of the World Titan Federation, which had already started playing mind games before the match started. But after the match, it really comes out full scale, as Kane gets on the mic and he's just basically saying nobody from the outside's coming in and taking this title off of him, and that's for the people. That is Beaumaye. Matt Cardona comes out with Mr. Saint Laurent. He wants to win the championship in Philadelphia because he himself is an ECW original. Ha ha ha. 2006, bro. And Kane basically just invites Cardona to the ring to fight, and they has fight outside the ring. In the ring, Tom Lawler has a chair, takes out Mr. Thomas, kind of, sort of, at least just long enough to, like, get a surprise chair shot in, and they has fight. And we basically, like, one of the last things we see as we fade to black, no pun intended, is just a massive FU kick to Tom Lawler outside the ring. Just shoved him down on the ground. It was great. There, that's how we ended the show. Overall, like, it was a really good show, very entertaining. Every match was kind of like what you would expect out of it, which of course is not necessarily a bad thing, in terms of meeting expectations. Because again, like, but I'm framing this is with your expectations. So if you're expecting like a 5-star match again out of like the Chamber of Horrors, well, yeah, but I feel like that's your problem. Everything was exactly what it was supposed to be, and even then, like, there's some surprises out of it, like what's going to happen with the calling soon, like what are we going to see out of Rocky Romero and the new Promotion Estrada, the shocking loss to what should have been an MLW Phantom in Jinai Kai. What does this mean for Delmi Exo? Are we going to see her again? They've really kind of put her on the back burner and pump the heckins out of Becca in the process. So we got a lot of questions that, you know, we will hopefully get answered in the next couple of weeks, with the Fusion tapings coming up from this event. But yeah, the wrestling is top tier. Like, this is what MLW is about. This is what MLW should be bringing to the table basically like every week. There is some very solid storytelling tonight. MLW is putting on banger matches when some of the creative is not getting in the way. And tonight is just a perfect example of the potential of Major League Wrestling. And hopefully they can capitalize on the momentum of an event like this is going to bring them. And that is just, that is something else that we are going to have to wait and see if they can do. I'm hoping, because tonight was just banger after banger after banger, man. And like, I'm, you know, it gets my hopes up. I'm excited to see what's going on with the calling. I'm ecstatic that we finally got to see what Akira could do outside of the deathmatch confines, at least on MLW television. You know, I want to see where we're going with Jinai Kai. Legit excited for things. So I'm going to take a pause for the cause, get some drinks. I'll take a nap, really, because thanks to the power of editing, I can do that. We'll come back with our next episode of Fusion. So I'll see you guys un momento. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Ray's Energy for that pickup. Ray's comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently, Italian Ice, which is great, by the way. And it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So, also, be like CASS, drink Ray's Energy. All right, now that Slaughterhouse is out of the way, let's take a look at Fusion 187, the fallout from Slaughterhouse, the beginning of a brand new season of MLW Fusion. The show starts off with highlights from Slaughterhouse. We get our introduction. our announcers or commentary team of Joe Dombrowski and Matt Stryker know that there's extra security in the arena as we run down the card. We cut backstage and Love Doug is with Sam Laterna. Becca is out of action. He is feeling sad, but he did buy candies for Sam. But a wild Selena De La Renta appears, scares off everyone, takes the chocolates, notes that they are pretty good. That being said, Love Doug gets to come to the ring. He is a part of our first match where he will be taking on Ichiban number one. Before the match even starts, we get a both these guys chant. Like, the match hasn't started yet. They're just standing across from each other. And both these guys, both these guys, both these guys. The crowd's just eating it up already. The bell rings, and we get ourselves some hot action. Both guys are going at each other with the classic cruiserweight exchange, leading to a dropkick and a standoff. However, once the respect is given, Ichiban takes over with the one punches in the corner. Doug spins him around and counters with 10 kisses in the corner. We go to break, and we come back. We get Bulldog. I jumped the gun on this because I can't write. I'm illiterate. We come back from break, and Doug throws rose petals into Ichiban's face to hit a bulldog. Only gets two for that. Stryker correctly notes that that is technically an illegal object, no matter what the intent behind it was. And really, the intent behind it was to get the advantage. So that should have been a disqualification by Doug. Sorry, have to call it like I see it, Doug. Everyone knows I'm a stickler for the rules, but obviously referees are biased and biased by love in this here situation, as the match is allowed to continue. However, this distraction doesn't hold off the rising tide of Ichiban for long. He mounts a comeback, finishing with Ichiban Kai, like, really plants Doug in the process, like, face first into the mat. 1, 2, 3, your winner, Ichiban. Match was short and sweet. Like, both guys incredibly over with the Philadelphia crowd. I'd like to see the match go on a bit longer, but, you know, it was a very entertaining sprint. And so, like, it did what it needed to do. It was a solid opener, got the blood going, ready for the rest of the show and the fallout from Slaughterhouse. We are on the stage following this match, like immediately after, despite the pause in my tone. Sam Laterna is interviewing Love Doug. She notes that this match was for the Merled Middleweight Championship opportunity sometime in the future. Doug is getting ready to say something when a backup dancer from Becca appears and delivers a card. Evidently, Becca has sent Love Doug a card. However, he won't kiss and tell. Smooches. Backstage, Sam Laterna has somehow, teleported or something. She's with Filthy Tom Lawler. He knows that since he's been away from MLW, he has dominated the world of professional wrestling. And he comes back to MLW, and what? Don King is promoting matches? Like, Tom has worked for a lot of sketchy promoters throughout his heralded career, including Dana White. And he notes that King is the scummiest, most underhanded promoter in the business that he has ever seen. Like, he just can't believe MLW is working with him, and that's why he's joined the World Titan Federation. He's not part of MLW, he is part of WTF, because WTF, Don King's allowed to promote matches here. That's crazy. Go nuts. Commentary puts over that there was a potential confrontation backstage between Mance Warner and Matt Cardona after Slaughterhouse, so Matt Cardona's getting himself into, even more fights backstage. That's why we got the extra security out here. We also get a recap of what happened to Kevin Blackwood, our number one draft pick of the MLW draft. He was taken out by TJ Crawford and Tony Deppen. We go outside. Deppen and Crawford are, gloating. the damage they've done. They settle and like, we should attack someone else. I don't know. And they kind of like, do we go after court? Do we go after the commentary team? They settle for the cameraman. As everything goes black, Joe announces that Tony Deppen has been suspended for all of his actions up to this point, and he's refused to pay all the fines. So MLW's had no choice but to suspend him. We go to a promo video from the Second Gear crew. The one called Manders welcomes Matt Cardona to MLW. Following this, we get a promo video for Miyu Yamashita. She is coming to Fightland. We also get a recap from Slaughterhouse of the turmoil within the Calling. Kira and Ricochet Page, the tag team champions, mind you, kind of got into a scuffle, mostly the fact that Ricochet Page shoved Akira to the ground at the event. So what's going on from here? We don't get those answers yet, but I am still waited with bated breath to see what's happening on that front. Sam Laterna is now with Mr. St. Laurent. MSL said that he had flirted with the idea of giving Wollongong Manders a spot in the World Titan Federation. Manders wasn't terribly interested, once again showing that he may not be the brightest bulb in the box. And St. Laurent pretty much notes that like this may be the worst mistake Manders makes in his entire life. Obviously, MSL's not seen the man in action, because that man has made a lot of mistakes, and I'm certain most of them are worse than that. Anyhow, let's just keep chugging along to our next match. The main event will be taking on the Beaumaye Fight Club, represented by Jay Bougie and Mr. Thomas. Bougie and Midas Black start the match out, but there's some quick tandem offense by both teams, actually, starting with the Beaumayes and then by the main event. We get the hoop-assisted Tope Con Elo by Lions. We go to break, we come back, and there's more tandem offense by the main event. They are taking over for quite some time. Hit a zigzag Uranambi combo when we get two, though. Bougie, however, comes back with a diving DDT and tags in Mr. Thomas, who cleans the house because he's like a foot taller than everybody else in the ring. Sidewalk slam only gets two just because it was broken up by Lions, so the match has to continue. We get a whiplash tandem spear by the main event. It takes Thomas off his feet. Double springboard cutter by Bougie brings the Beaumayes back into the mix. The main event go outside to recover, and Mr. Thomas just chucks Bougie onto the arena floor. It was great. I love it. Pop-up spine buster by Thomas, though, gets the three inside the ring. Oh, wow, that was a lot in a short amount of time. Thoroughly entertaining match. Some innovative offense by the main event. Once again, really kind of showing like how underutilized the main event is in MLW. That they're pretty much just used to put other teams over for the most part, unless they're with Microman. But like the guys are work so well together and come up with some really innovative tandem offense, and they're just kind of regulated to these kind of matches to put other folks over. I am also surprised, though, how well Mr. Thomas and Jay Bougie worked together. I'm not sure how many times that they've actually tagged with each other. I know this is the first time in MLW. I was bad and I didn't do my cage match research prior to this and making the statement, mostly because I didn't plan on making this statement at all. Like, I don't plan a lot of things. However, you know, it was a good match, and I just like to see more out of the main event because they're so different. There's nothing quite like them out there, and I think that needs to be promoted within the ranks. We go to Atlanta, Georgia now, where Alex Kane's home base is. He knows that he's not a sports entertainer. This is his house, MLW, where fights happen. He was disrespected in his house, and nobody Fs with that, Matt Cardona. Speaking of Matt Cardona enemies, Manswarter is backstage, kind of outside or so. He's been drinking and thinking, baby. He's looking for improvised weapons, if you will. From there, we go to the office of Selena De La Renta. She notes that due to some lawsuits, Court Bauer will not be in attendance next week for Fusion, so she is once again going to be producing an episode of MLW Fusion, which is amazing because she's only been back for like 3 seconds. Her words, not mine. All right, it is time for our main event of the evening. Matt Cardona taking on the one called Manders. Mr. St. Laurent out on commentary because he is hanging out with Matt Cardona, leeching off his popularity to try to get himself over while he chews all the scenery. All for naught, though, of course. So, match starts out. Manders overpowers Cardona, just chuck him around hither and yarn. In the corner, though, Manders misses a spear because that's how they play football in the University of Iowa. A second rope drop kick takes Manders down by Cardona. Cardona takes over a bit until he gets hit with a really big spine buster, followed up by a rebound lariat, only gets a two count. Once again, Manders showing off his University of Iowa football skills by missing a tackle into the ring post, but recovers just long enough to launch Cardona over the top rope and to the floor. Manders goes out to jawjack with Mr. St. Laurent like he's a lowly podcaster or something, and when he comes back into the ring, he gets a ring rope into the nether regions courtesy of Matt Cardona. This doesn't really get to mean much because Manders hits a big power bomb countering the radio silence, only gets two off that. Manders goes to finish him off with the lariat, but Cardona is smart, uses the biased referee as a meat shield, getting an eye poke in, followed up by radio silence. 1, 2, 3, your winner, Matt Cardona. I'm kind of surprised at a certain level. Cardona really did put Manders over, allowed Manders to get plenty of offense in. And to be frank, the more spectacular offense of the duo, Cardona kept his offense pretty darn simple overall, and did some solid heel work to let Manders kind of fight up and try to overcome the odds. However, because Manders can't do much of anything, right? Couldn't capitalize on these here things, and fell victim to radio silence. Good match overall. Honestly, like, I don't know if it was truly main event worthy, but compared to the other matches on this episode, it by default, I feel it is the main event. And I don't mean to do this to put, like, the rest of the matches down. Ultimately, Matt Cardona, like, in terms of star power, like, should almost always be the main event of MLW. Just, like, biases aside, like, those are just kind of the facts of most situations. However, after the match, Cardona gets on the microphone, notes that he is undefeated, he is 2-0, basically puts down the Mance Warner in the process. Mance shows up like the devil, you say his name, he done appears, and we has brawl to the back. That is how we are ending our show, ladies and gentlemen, with another schmoz, but at least they waited for the match to be over for this one. Really quick episode. We could make complaints about, you know, possibly lack of, like, some star power, and I'm going to complain about how the main event are going to be used, but I'm going to keep doing that until they get the tag team titles, if I can be totally honest about the situation. But it was a fun show overall, setting up setting up things for the current season, seeing Selena De La Renta continuing her rise to power once again. Tom Waller sticking around, so I am excited for that. The one called Manders got beat, so let's face it, man, I am ecstatic. I am a happy camper tonight. I think I'm just going to go ahead and the show right now, go party. So thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for all the plugs, for the ways you can help support this podcast, to support my partying at the expense of the one called Manders. In the meanwhile, I'll catch y'all next week. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and hosted by Spotify for Podcasters. MLW Confusion is part of the Urban Wrestling Network. You can check out the Underground Rundown on YouTube at Urban Wrestling NW. The background music for this selection is Ruined My Day by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review is also helpful. Word-of-mouth advertisement is very important for small podcasts, such as this one. My social media links can be found in the description, but the Twitter and Instagram is at TheNovaOfCass, TheNovaOfCass, and Facebook is at MLW Confusion, one word. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual tip jar at www.kofi.com/Casanova, that is CASSONOVA. Or if you prefer some more bang for your buck, go to patreon.com/CASSONOVA to join the MLW Confusion Patreon. For as little as $2 a month, backers get access to the podcast early and ad-free, plus other weekly exclusive content. So join the crew that is headed up by Keith Wynn, Alan Schroeder, and Alex McCarthy and check it out. You can also find t-shirts, coffee mugs, and other merch at the Confusion Podcast store on Teespring, link below. For business inquiries, such as ads and sponsorships, please email rzkammerer, K-A-M-E-R-E-R, at comcast.net. Thank you all for listening.
I'm sorry.